So we are administratively a unit of the office of the governor, but we do not report to the governor's office, particularly as staff. We report to these seven commissioners. The commissioners are appointed by the governor and subject to legislative confirmation. Those commissioners are our current chairperson, Zachary Gottschall, vice chairperson, and he's in Fairbanks, or he's in Anchorage. Mae Marsh is our vice chairperson, and she lives in Fairbanks. William Craig is our former interim chairperson, obviously from Sitka. We have Rebecca Carrillo in Juneau, Lonzo Henderson, also in Anchorage, and Jesse Rufford in Kenai. The commission has jurisdiction to investigate essentially five areas of discrimination. The bulk of our cases, 80% of our cases, are employment discrimination cases. We also do cases of public accommodation, the sale and rental of real property, credit and financing, and government practices. And any retaliation that someone experiences for having reported discrimination is also unlawful, and we can investigate that. But usually those obviously arise out of an underlying underlying discrimination claim. And then the protected classes are age, race, sex, gender identity, and sexual orientation, but only for employment law. Physical and mental disability, national origin, religion, pregnancy and parenthood sometimes. So if any Alaskan or anybody who's in Alaska finds himself discriminated against in one of those five subject matter areas based on their status as a member of a protected class, we have the authority to investigate the case and prosecute the case. So, I mean, a little bit about my background too. I'm also an attorney. I grew up in Anchor Point, did my undergrad at MIT and stayed on the East Coast for law school. I ended up spending 5.5 years in the DA's office and then went and did mostly civil litigation, but it was a general practice firm. So I did a lot of stuff for 7 years before coming back to the state. So when we show up or when we end up getting a complaint and contacting a respondent, we are the specter of litigation. We follow a law enforcement model. We've got a team of investigators, as well as myself and a couple other attorneys that will then prosecute the case. And particularly with employment cases, we have the ability to provide make-whole relief, so restitution-type damages. And often we find that our cases end up being kind of the marginal monetary cases. Usually if someone walks in with a $100,000 claim, they can go find a private attorney who's more than willing to take that case on. But we do this for free. We are a state agency. So we have no qualms taking on the cases that are only worth a few hundred dollars, or particularly in public accommodation cases, there's usually no monetary compensation. Or if it is, it's usually just going to be like the cost of dinner or the cost of admission to the theater or the venue, whatever it was that that you were not allowed in. So what happens if you find yourself discriminated against? Somebody, you call the commission, you call our hotline. We have an investigator that rotates through every day. So there's always an investigator manning that line. If you can't get a hold of an investigator, leave a message. They will call you back. We also have the ability to take complaints online. You can fill out a form on our website, humanrights.alaska.gov 24/7. And we've got a general email address that'll go to the investigators, and that's hrc@alaska.gov. And the investigator will contact you back if it's outside of business hours. So we get a complaint that comes in the door. We go through our jurisdictional discussion to figure out, is this actually a jurisdictional case? The complaint of harm has to have taken place within 300 days, or the harm has to have taken place within 300 days of the complaint. We do have if it is an ongoing harm, I mean, if you find yourself discriminated in the workplace for like 5 years and finally you get fed up with it and call us, we can look back to the very beginning of that discrimination. We've implemented a new, what we're calling a resolutions conference process. So once a complainant articulates a jurisdictional case, decides, yes, I want to move forward with the complaint, we can use our subpoena authority to bring the respondent in and make everybody sit down. We informally call it Bring Your Stuff Day because we require everybody to bring all of their evidence. It's kind of a fact-finding opportunity for us. And then at the end of that, we will ask the parties, hey, are you interested in settling the case? And we've had pretty great success in having implemented this resolutions conference. One of our biggest criticisms as a state agency is that we take too long to do our investigations. But we may actually see a 40-plus-year-long goal be accomplished within the next fiscal year of getting our average investigation time down underneath a year due to this resolutions conference. If the resolutions conference fails, the we move into a formal investigation. And so that is what everything you would expect of an investigation, getting documents, sending out requests for information, talking to witnesses, recording those interviews. And then if we find that there is substantial evidence of discrimination, we issue that determination and it moves into what we call the conciliation phase. If we have no substantial evidence of discrimination, then we end up just issuing a closing order, but a complainant has the opportunity to still appeal that decision into the superior court. If we find substantial evidence, we go into what we call conciliation. And that's another opportunity to sit down and try and negotiate with the respondent to come up with a reasonable solution and make sure that there is no further discrimination and to remedy the harm that took place. And if we are not able to settle the case during that conciliation phase, at that point, we'll make the call as to whether this is a trial-worthy case. And we go ahead and file an accusation with the Office of Administrative Hearings. And at that point, the case does become public. And it's the full panoply of civil litigation with the other attorney on the respondent's side and doing the case in front of the Office of Administrative Hearings. Once the trial is over, the administrative law judge issues an order, but it's a proposed order. And it's at that point that our seven volunteer commissioners sit down and sit in their quasi-judicial function with the advice of an assistant AG to make sure that they don't go off the rails in terms of what is required under the law. And they usually will adopt then the proposed order out of the Office of Administrative Hearings. And at that point, it becomes a formal order of the commission. I said that at that point, it becomes public when we get into the accusation phase. So by law, all of our complaints and all of our investigations, all the way up through the conciliation phase, are confidential. They are exempted from the state's Public Records Act. And that's because people who file discrimination complaints often face retaliation. And that's not right. At the same time, we're not intended to be a punitive agency. You know, if we can correct a respondent and get them to understand that they screwed up and they violated the law and they are willing to fix the problem and make sure it doesn't happen again, that's great. That's a win for everybody. That's why we have a pretty ironclad confidentiality statute. So, I mean, like David Newman was up here earlier and, I would love to be able to take at least partial credit for some of the things that he talked about too, but I'm not allowed to by law. We have seen kind of some things that you might be interested in. We've definitely seen an uptick in service animal complaints. I mean, just across the board nationwide, we are also a partner with the EEOC, federal EEOC. Across the board, there has been an uptick in disability-related complaints for probably going on even pre-pandemic, so I'd say at least 3 years. But in Alaska in particular, we've seen a lot of complaints related to service animals. So we've been trying to do a little more targeted outreach, talking to bars, restaurants. We've created a guidance document and several little flyers, including some little pocket cards that are laminated that been handing out to primarily restaurants and bars. So that way they've got a handy guide as to, all right, a dog walks in, what are the things I'm allowed to ask? What am I not allowed to ask? Here's my little quick cheat sheet. What else? I know I was already starting late, so I'm trying to talk fast and I am a lawyer, so I like to talk a lot. We did have the election law lawsuit that was technically supposed to be confidential by law. We did file a motion to make the entire case file proceeding confidential. And that was granted by the Superior Court judge 15 minutes before I read about us on the front page of the Anchorage Daily News. So at that point, it became public. We won. We won initially at the Superior Court level and pushed pause on the special primary election for the Division of Elections' failure to accommodate blind and visually impaired voters to be able to vote privately and independently back in June. So that was kind of a big deal for us to push pause on a federal election. Now, 24 hours later, the Alaska Supreme Court reversed and vacated in a one-page order that said, we'll tell you why later. So we are still waiting for them to issue that formal decision, but we expect that is going to be a formal opinion, published opinion of the court, as opposed to just a memorandum order. And it should end up being a fairly important precedent-setting case, not only for ACTRA, but also for voting rights in the state of Alaska. Short of that, because it is still technically in the investigation phase, I really can't comment any more than that. Recognizing that, again, I started late. Does anybody have any questions?
Now, are you the person I would talk to about, like they mentioned earlier about the bus stops and cleaning off the bus stops? The reason I'm saying that is because earlier this year in winter, when it was starting to do the melt, I have major tunnel vision, and the bus driver pulled up and I stepped off and stepped into knee deep icy cold water and almost fell because it shocked me. And I was really upset. And he said, oh, well, all he can do is stop at the bus stops. He can't stop a little bit before the puddles or anything like that. And then coming, I went to the Safeway on Muldoon and Northern Lights, and coming back out, there was no bus stop for me to stand on. I was standing in the street where people are coming down that hill. So it's like a lot of the bus stops in the area where I live is they don't plow it. He said they're only going to plow certain ones. And where those big puddles are, I mean, they're going to let me off at the bus stop where there's ice water.
I mean, that's a maybe. I mean, it still has to be a discriminatory act. And I mean, in this case, we could take it as a government practice because the municipality of Anchorage and or the state of Alaska is responsible for plowing. But it would have to be a discriminatory act based on your status as a member of a protected class. And so something that applies equally to everybody isn't going to end up being discriminatory. And so that's why it's a tougher one to make out. I've had some of these similar conversations with William Craig. You know, my best recommendation is, rather than us trying to hash it out right now, is to, when you have something like that, call our investigator, call the hotline and work it out with them to see if we can articulate a jurisdictional case. I mean, I'll also know, I mean, if someone articulates a jurisdictional case, we take it in. There's no, it is purely one-sided at the complaint stage. Now, certainly the respondent may or may not have defenses, but if a complainant walks in the door with a jurisdictional claim, we take it in.
Hey, this is Katie. Do you work with the city of Anchorage or any in the area in regards to like where public transit goes or anything? Because, you know, like with Anchor Rides, there's like a core versus a premium. And sometimes there are some challenges because of the time frame and when you can be picked up. And so it intervenes on like any schedules or doctor's appointments that you need to go to. If you need to be there at 9,
right,
they're not picking you up at certain days of the week or the time frame to get you to and from or different things.
So work with, no. I mean, we've got some guidance documents and we are helping to try to provide friendly advice to the extent that we are legally allowed to, but we can't provide legal advice to the public. Like I said, we're essentially a small litigation firm that is an entity of the state. So, and we have jurisdiction over the municipality of Anchorage. So to the extent that, I mean, the municipality could arguably be discriminating in how it sets up its schedule for Anchor Rides. Yeah, I mean, we could maybe take that case in. You know, it probably kind of a classic example of a government practices case was a race discrimination case. And honestly, I'd still say probably half of our cases still end up being race discrimination and the other half are sex discrimination. Like I said, disabilities is a growing area. But it was a situation where there was a fishing regulation in Yakutat that only negatively impacted Tlingit fishermen that were surf fishing. And so that was the thing where it's like, okay, it was a purely discriminatory impact, even though the regulation was neutral on its face. So, I mean, to the extent that, and I mean, that one was also tainted by the fact that the DNR guy who was in Yakutat and recommended the regulation had a lot of racist statements in his emails and reports to the Board of Fish. So, I mean, that's a more easy cut and dry type case. So to the extent that we could articulate, all right, well, you know, a governmental entity is discriminating against a protected class based on a schedule or only has a purely discriminatory impact. Yeah, that we could take that case. Okay. Again, that doesn't mean that the respondent doesn't have defenses to it.
Thank you. And I have one. Gotcha. And then I hopefully had just another quick one. Do you guys work with the organizations like HOAs and like when they're a 501c, if there's any discrimination or issues, or is that specifically so
again,
someone else?
Work with? No, but
we sue them. Try to resolve issues in regards to the discrimination if there is one.
Yes. So as an employer, for employment law cases, state law explicitly exempts nonprofits. So we cannot bring a case against a nonprofit for an employment discrimination claim. So there's actually a huge hole in Alaska based on this. If you're within the municipality of Anchorage, I think AERCS jurisdiction, If the employer has more than 15 employees, EEOC has jurisdiction. But if you're outside the muni and under 15 employees and it's a nonprofit, you can essentially get away with discrimination. In terms of nonprofits as places of public accommodation, yes, we do have jurisdiction over them that way. So to the extent that they have a physical location and or provide a service to the public, then they are required to have non-discriminatory practices. Same thing, I mean, with HOAs. I mean, an HOA could be a place of public accommodation. It could also be a housing discrimination case. So yes, to that extent, we have jurisdiction over HOAs too.
Okay, I have a question that kind of goes with her question about the people mover, anchorites. Would it be discrimination if they want you to like look out the window and see when the bus is coming? If you're visually impaired, how can you do it?
Yeah, that's you should probably call my intake investigator.
Okay, because I was left several times because I was not looking out the window to see them. And I tried to explain to them, if I'm visually impaired, how am I supposed to look out the window?
Yeah, that's...
That sounds like a driver issue. But yes.
Uh-huh. And no phone call and no announcement on the bus. No, yeah, that's... You should probably call the intake investigator.
Okay.
I mean, and that's the kind of thing where, speaking totally in hypothetical, you know, we're not looking to go out and punish the municipality, but if we can get them to change their practice so that all bus drivers know, look, you need to announce this. You know, we'll twist their arm a little bit. And that's the kind of case that usually resolves up front and we don't end up having to go to a big public trial kind of thing.
Thank you.
All right. Bonnie's coming up here. So that means I'm done. Thank you very much.